and welcome to the episode 2 of the homebrewing episode. This is again the Yelky Mantis, your favorite, I don't know if I'm your favorite, I'm just making an assumption there, homebrewing companion. By now you should have some nice, almost ready to be bottled beer, had you, you know, gone out and purchased your homebrew kit and gotten everything around when episode 1 of the Hacker Public Radio homebrewing series was released. Couple of notes about episode 2. Episode 2 is going to start off with bottling and then go on to fermentation fun. And this episode of Hacker Public Radio is coming to you from my car. Dave Yates has that great car cast where he says, coming at you from 70 miles an hour or 65 or something like that. I'm averaging about 40, driving the back roads of Pennsylvania between clients. Anyway, on to happy topics such as homebrew. Now, the equipment that you're going to need from your equipment list of the first episode is going to be your siphoning tube, your bottles, any brushes or knives that you might want to keep handy, a bottling vessel, your priming sugar. You do not necessarily need a spoon to be sterilized. However, if you want to get a spoon sterilized, that is completely acceptable. Let's see, you've got to search for this. And you might need, if your priming sugar is not pre-measured, you might want to get a scale, because scales are more accurate than measuring cups, because scales take into account the volume of air in a powdered substance, whereas a cup size measuring tool does not. Anyway, on Eva. So what you do, first things first, is you sterilize. You sterilize everything. You sterilize everything well. When we made the wort, you remember that I talked very heavily about sterilization. Tried to stress the importance of sterilization. It's even more important with the bottling phase of brewing. If you don't sterilize your tube efficiently, or not efficiently, but sufficiently enough, all your beer is going to go bad. All of it. Every last drop of beer is going to be bad because it's going to have contaminants in the tube. Not what we want. So, sterilize. Everything has to be completely sterile and clean for this step. You're working with a whole mess of equipment, whereas before you had, you know, your pot and a few other things. Now you've got 50 to 60 bottles that you're dealing with, and your tube and your bottling vessel and so on and so forth. It all has to be clean and sterile. I cannot stress this enough, obviously. So, once everything is clean and sterilized, a note on the bottles, I usually put some sterilizing solution, the Seabright, in my dishwasher with the dishwasher turned on high heat with heat dry. Now, I know that some people recommend against this, but I've had pretty good results with it. Last batch, I think I had one or two bad bottles out of the whole kit and caboodle. So, it's a pretty easy way of getting pretty good results, as far as I'm concerned, in sterilization. Now, you want to dissolve your priming sugar and sterilize the water at the same time. So you're going to take a cup or two of water, depending on what your recipe calls for, and you're going to boil it. And then you're going to dump in your priming sugar, usually between 2 and 4 ounces, depending on what kind of beer you're making. If it's a low gravity, high gravity, whatever your recipe calls for, do that. The last recipe I had was just 2 ounces of priming sugar, which is not very much at all. So you take your priming sugar, you dump it in, you dissolve it, and let that boil off for a couple of seconds. Turn off the stove, and swirl your cup or two of water around. And then dump it into your bottling vessel. Now your bottling vessel can be a 5-gallon bucket. It can be a... what I used is a 5-gallon igloo cooler. I have one of those ones with the spout on the bottom for, you know, sporting events or whatever. Use it when I go camping and just fill it with water. But I sterilized that up and used it as my bottling vessel. Dumped the hot water into there with the sugar. And then I siphoned my beer into that vessel. I didn't worry about stirring, because the agitation of the beer going into the mixture is going to very easily stir the sugars into the whole thing. It's going to be thoroughly distributed. So that's not a big deal worrying about that. What you do have to worry about is oxygen. Granted, the chemists among you are going to say, well, you want a little bit of oxygen so the fermentation can take place once you put it in the bottles. You're absolutely right. The amount of oxygen that you want, however, is very, 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 very small. You don't want a lot of oxygen because it can impart weird flavors into your beer. It can actually cause other reactions to occur in your beer. So when you siphon it off, put the end of your siphon in the bottom of the bucket so that after the first couple of seconds it's completely underwater. That'll be more than enough oxygen dispersed into your beer. Plus, you're moving it all. That beer is going to be moving. It's going to get plenty of oxygen. You should worry more about getting too much than too little. A word about siphoning. If you're using the glass carboy method like I do, get a racking cane, I guess it's called. And on the other end, you're going to have just a tube with a bend in it and a little cap on it. My cap's black, I've seen white, I've seen red. And what this cap does is it prevents the yeast from being sucked up the siphon hose. And it's pretty neat. If you're using one of these caps, you can typically just throw in your hardened plastic tube, start the siphon, which you want to do with water. You don't want to, you know, put your mouth on the siphoning hose, because then again you're going to be contaminating. So you start your siphon, you get that down in there, and pretty much just make sure the siphoning hose doesn't come out of the bottling bucket and you don't have to worry about it again. I've had really, really good luck with those little caps designed for that purpose. So there we are. Everything has gone from your primary fermentation vessel into your bottling bucket. Your bottling bucket is important so that you get an even distribution of sugar and an easy place where you don't have to worry about agitating the yeast off the bottom. Don't worry about yeast getting into your bottle to create those nice fizzy bubbles that we're looking for. There's plenty of yeast still suspended in your liquid, as you will see in about 3 weeks. Now, a note on priming sugar. I probably should have said this back when we were talking about priming sugar, but I didn't. So, use the exact amount of priming sugar recommended by your recipe. This cannot be stressed enough, especially if you have pets and small children. If you put in too much priming sugar, your vessels will explode. I don't know necessarily about the PET plastic bottles, but I do know that glass bottles can explode. They usually explode around the neck, throwing shards of glass. I've had this happen because I put in too much sugar one time. Now, you don't want to put in too little sugar because then you won't have that nice fizz. But you just follow the recipe and everything will be good. As you take readings on your specific gravity, now would be a nice time to take a little bit out and do a specific gravity reading, see where your specific gravity settled out. And then you can take the stuff that you use to test your specific gravity and drink it. See what it tastes like. Remember, the whole point of home brewing is not only to save a little bit of money making really high quality beer, but to be able to control each step of it and see what each step is like, see what it tastes like, see what happens if you do this, what happens if you experiment. Take your specific gravity reading, record it. Record how much sugar you add. Record the specific gravity after you add that sugar, so on and so forth. You can do a whole bunch of fun stuff recording just extremely minute details, and then changing some of those minute details and see what happens. Anyway, on to the rest of the bottling process. This process works best if you have two people, one person filling the bottles, the other person moving the bottles and capping them. That's just the absolute easiest way. A couple of times I've made beer, my wife has been able to help me, and just it goes so much faster that way. She fills and I move the bottles and cap them, because the capping is a little bit more physically intense. You have to push down on the bottles pretty hard. Now, if you don't have two people, here's what you do. You line up every last one of your bottles within reach of your bottling tool so that you can put your bottling tool down into the bottom of the bottle, fill up your bottle, pull it out, and you want about an inch at the top of your bottle. Fill up all of your bottles. Then, after you're done filling up all of your bottles, clean up your siphon, put your bottling bucket aside, and then cap each of your bottles, then wipe off each of your bottles and put them in a storage location. By doing one thing at a time, you're decreasing the risk of cross-contamination of, you know, if you're wiping off bottles, maybe there's bacteria on the bottle, you might get bacteria on the lip of your bottle as you're capping it, in any number of different ways. So if you're just capping, you keep capping. If you're filling, keep filling. If you're, you know, cleaning and storing, just do that. Never mix your steps. If you absolutely have to pause what you're doing in the middle of a step, go ahead and do that. Pause what you're doing, but before you come back, make sure you sterilize your hands, make sure you sterilize the equipment that you're using. Be very, very careful. So, now everything's in bottles. Put those bottles aside, wait 3 weeks, toss them in the fridge, let them sit for 24 hours. This is very important. After they sat for 24 hours in your refrigerator, pop the top and pour a glass. When you pour a glass, leave the bottom quarter to a half an inch in the bottle. You will see, after you've done that, you can shake that up and pour it out into a second glass. It will be a creamy white color. That's all that yeast that was created after you put it in the bottle. Well, maybe not entirely, but you know, they were born from the yeast that was already in the solution. When you put that in the refrigerator, it dropped out, so it clarified the yeast a little bit, and there's much less yeast in the bottle or the beer that you poured into the glass. You never want to drink homemade beer out of the bottle. And the reason for this is simple. Yeast. It tastes like yeast. It doesn't taste like beer. If you drink it out of the bottle, you're going to be tipping the bottle and shaking the bottle and moving the bottle around as you know, get mad at your friends while playing poker. Or whatever it is you do while you drink beer. So, you don't want to be drinking directly out of the bottle. You want to drink out of the glass. Now, some people may think that that's being a sissy. You can just laugh at them as they drink their Budweiser and know that your beer is far superior to theirs, and so on and so forth. Now, note on bottling versus kegging. I'm sure a lot of you have listened so far and said, yes, but I don't like bottles. I want to make a keg. Have at it. I've never done it, simply because it's far too expensive. And I don't really have a need to, because I usually end up sharing my beer with neighbors and so on and so forth. Kegging requires a lot of extra equipment. It's the other end of the spectrum. You need your keg washer, you need your CO2 tanks, your regulators, your taps, your refrigerators, and so on and so forth. It is an entirely intensive purpose. It's very, very expensive to get started. It'll probably triple or quadruple your costs of making beer initially. The upside of kegs is, hey, they're reusable for all get out. You never have a flat beer, because you're adding in carbon dioxide to push the beer out. It's pretty cool to have your own bar in your house and be like, hey man, check it out, I made this one last Thursday, and so on and so forth. So that's pretty cool. There is also an intermediary step, sort of. This is called the Party Pig. The Party Pig comes in approximately 2.5 gallon sizes. It is a PET bottle, which is a plastic bottle. And it's got little satchels that you put in it that release specific amounts of carbon dioxide in order to maintain a specific pressure inside the bottle at any given time. So you always have fizzy beer. It is a little bit more expensive than individual bottles. You're, again, adding carbon dioxide, which you're adding carbon dioxide through the fermentation process, so that's no real difference. You're just doing this one in a chemical process as opposed to like the natural yeast process. The Party Pig seems to be pretty cool. It's got a little neoprene sheath that you can buy for it, and it's supposed to keep it cool longer. Looks like it should fit in your fridge. And you can buy one of those. I saw them online for $39. But be cautious when you buy it, because the startup kit that I saw did not have the CO2 activation pump that is required by the Party Pig to work. That was an extra $9. But you only need one of those for all of your little Party Pig kegs. So, if you have one pressurizing nozzle, you can do as many as kegs as you want. The price difference is about $5 or $6 per batch. So that's entirely up to you, because you need a CO2 pouch for each new batch, and that's kind of your replacement object. Instead of buying caps, you're buying a CO2. I think sooner or later I might try the Party Pigs. Right now I'm just really happy with the bottles, because I can share them with my friends and not have to worry about getting them back or them being damaged or anything like that. So I'm pretty happy with the bottles. If you're lazy and don't want to do that and you're just going to, you know, drink 2.5 gallons of beer in the sitting, go with the Party Pig. Now, on to fermentation fun. Now, as many of you may or may not know, I have a son. And my son is currently 10 months old, but sooner or later, he's going to become more than 10 months old, like, you know, when he turns 11 months old. And sooner or later, he's going to say, Daddy, what are you doing? And I'm going to say, well, son, I am making a tasty malt beverage for myself. And being a good dad, I hope I am, he's probably going to say, well, hey, Dad, can I do that too? And I'll say, how about this? How about we make a tasty malt beverage for you? Now, some of you out there may be saying, you're going to give your kid beer? No, I'm going to make soda pop. Now, the process for making soda pop is similar to the process of making beer, with a couple exceptions. One, we don't have as much fermentable sugar. Two, we don't encourage as much fermentation. When you're done making beer, you're going to have about the same amount of alcohol in your liquid as you would in a bottle of Florida orange juice, because yes, it is, you know, a fruit-based thing, and yes, it will ferment. It's orange juice. So here's what you need. You need a bucket. Depending on how much root beer or cola you're going to make, you need a big or a small bucket. Second thing you need, a long-handled spoon. They made fun of me for calling this a food-grade spoon, because of course it's a spoon. It's going to be food-grade. But what you want is a non-porous, high-quality spoon, one that's not going to be harboring any bacteria. Long-handled so that you can not touch your liquid. And you're going to need your siphoning tube and plastic bottles. The plastic bottles are PET bottles. And this is a special kind of plastic. It's not like a Coke bottle. It's a little bit more durable style of plastic. It's designed to be reused, whereas a Coke bottle is designed to go in a landfill, and they theoretically are designing those to biodegrade more quickly. And I guess once you reuse a Coke bottle, nasty chemicals are imparted into your liquid. So don't reuse bottles that you buy in the store. Make sure you have plastic bottles specifically for this purpose. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to find a recipe. Your local brew shop probably has a whole bunch of soda flavors and some recipes. There are some really, really great recipes online that use, you know, three different kinds of sugar, this much fermentable sugar, this much non-fermentable sugar, this much sugar that will encourage fizziness. That's pretty cool. There's also, typically you want to use champagne yeast. My understanding of it is, and it's always worked for me, that you don't want to use any more than a quarter of a teaspoon of yeast per batch of soda pop. And the reason is you don't want to encourage too much fermentation. But what you're going to do is this. You're going to take your yeast and you're going to mix it into your, essentially soda pop wort, and you're going to take your sugar and your flavorings and you're going to mix all that in according to the instructions that you found for your recipe, and we'll get to some instructions in just a second. Then you're going to bottle it into your PET plastic bottles, and I recommend a little bit larger than 12-ounce plastic bottles. I would recommend, you know, a liter or 2-liter plastic bottles for this purpose. And then you're going to set it in a cool, dark place for a minimum of 3 weeks. Now, with your beer, when you're doing this process with your beer, you're not all that concerned necessarily with letting it sit 3 weeks. I always open a bottle a week, minimum, just to see how it's progressing, to see what it's tasting like, to see how the fizz is going, to see whether I stuck fermentation in any bottles or anything like that. I like tasting it as it's aging. With soda pop, do not do this. It will not be fizzy enough before the pre-arranged date. How you can tell that it's fizzy enough is when it is rock hard. The bottle will just be very, very hard. You'll think that you'd filled it with lead. You won't be able to put any dent in it with your thumb. At this point in time, you put it into the refrigerator for 24 hours. Again, what you're trying to do is you're trying to clarify your soda pop and get any yeast to settle out of it. So you put it in there for 24 hours, pop the top, and enjoy. You'll have yourself a nice, fizzy, tasty beverage. Now, the coolness about soda pop is not only is it simple enough that your kids can participate in it, but you don't have to follow recipes as closely. You can experiment a little bit. For example, root beer, one of the primary flavoring ingredients in root beer is wintergreen. Now, not all flavors of root beer have wintergreen as their primary flavoring, but a lot of them do have that strong wintergreen flavor. Another big ingredient in root beer is anise, believe it or not, and sarsaparilla root. So there's all of these different flavors in root beer that you can kind of mix in and maybe come up with your own root beer recipe and share it online. Speaking of sharing soda pop recipes online, there is actually a project released under the GPL, which you and I know we all love, that is designed to be comparable to commercially available sodas such as Coke or Pepsi. Now, that's pretty cool, I think. And the recipe online is designed to get you a flavor of a Coke that tastes like something you would buy in a store, and you can make it at home. This is called the Open Cola Project, and if you check out the show notes, there will be a link to the Open Cola Project, as well as to a couple other places where you can download recipes for different styles of soda pop. But that is pretty cool, because not only can you be participating in an open source project, but you can be making soda pop with your kids, or hey, if you like soda pop, you can make your own soda pop by liquid caffeine and add as much caffeine as you want. You could make an energy drink. I'm sure that's what the guys who made the balls soft drink did, and they got together and started experimenting and said, hey, this tastes pretty good. At any rate, soda pop is the key to experimentation. Something interesting that I was thinking about root beer, I should have mentioned while I was talking about root beer, but something interesting that you could try is adding some malted barley to your root beer recipe to see how that would taste. I think that would be quite interesting, because then your root beer would have some beerish origins, and you would add that malt just like you would in a regular beer. I haven't tried that, but I think next time I make root beer, I'm going to get, maybe a half a pound or a pound of medium roasted malt and put that in there. Anyway, this has been Hacker Public Radio, Homebrew Episode Number 2. This is the Yelky Mantis saying, have a good day and drive safe.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.